Right.
Yep.
Okay, this we're having a sort of a late start to our Programs and Services Committee meeting. It's 8:30. Tonight's what, December 7, 2011. The second item we'll take up, because we took another item down the hall, is item, oh, I'm sorry, do I need to say president of the meeting? Okay.
And that it's being recorded.
And that it's being recorded. I never say that. President of the meeting is Alderman Baker from Ward 7, Alderman Ted Hestmahan from Ward 3, Alderman Dick Glazer from Ward 6, Alderman Carlton Merrill from Ward 1, and Alderman Mitch Fisherman from Ward 8, and I'm Amy Sangiello, the chair of the committee. The first item we'll take up is item number 404-11, Green Decade, Newton, requesting Board of Aldermen approval of Newton Extended Producer Responsibility, EPR resolution, which seeks statewide EPR framework legislation to support transfer of responsibility for the cost of managing discarded products to producers, brand owners, and first importers under oversight of the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection. And with us, we have two members from Green Decade. Marsha and... Would you join us at the table, please?
Procedural matter, do you want us to report the rules items to you tonight?
Yeah, later.
Okay.
Thank you. So if you'd like to tell us a little more about the item and
can
why...
Can I close the door?
Sure.
Yeah. You know, I think we'll start with Jay.
Jay, okay.
Well, this is...
I have a glasses.
Yeah, I don't have my glasses, so I can't...
No, I have.
So this proposal is basically about making our world, our consumer world, more sustainable by closing the loop, by making manufacturers responsible for what they produce, by taking things back and recycling and salvaging what they produce, so that we don't have a linear way of manufacturing where we're taking resources out of the earth, producing something and throwing it away. So we're limiting our resources at the beginning and creating this huge waste at the end. It's creating a loop where manufacturers produce something and then take it back and reuse it to produce more. It's really the overall solution, and this is the baby step that starts to get us there. And what this what we're asking is that we basically support the state that started this.
And the e-waste bill, which is a part of the EPR bill, that would save Newton considerable costs in getting our waste pickup. Like residents would not have to pay to recycle their electronics, for instance. So it really is the responsibility of the businesses that produce the packaging and the products to take responsibility for taking back what they put out into the world, basically. Local governments in California, British Columbia, the Northwest, Wisconsin, Vermont, and Texas have formed product stewardship councils, and other communities in Massachusetts are getting on board. And Newton, you know, very often we were the first green community, and in this we usually are on the forefront of making it a better world environmentally, and also it's financial gains, as I say.
It's a huge financial gain, because what we're doing is we're trying to lift the burden of all the solid waste off of the municipalities and give it to the back to the manufacturers.
And they do this with actually mercury. So it's not like it hasn't been done, but Amherst, Cambridge, Carlisle, Concord, Hardwick, Holyoke, Milton, Northampton, Salem, Springfield, and Worcester, they are all have come out with resolutions in favor of the EPR bill. So you have it really all in front of you, the resolution, and if you have a chance to look at it.
Alderman Baker?
Let me just ask, the language of the resolution is fine. The tricky question I'm curious about is that if this were to occur on a widespread basis, obviously something like this always runs into the question of what appropriate forum can you do this, because it's interstate commerce, and then usually what happens when one state begins to regulate, the National Association of Manufacturers gets together and says, we want a federal regulation on this subject, and then we end up with something different. But the question I was curious about is literally how would the community affect compliance with this if this were to happen, so that somebody puts a refrigerator into the stream of commerce, and if at some point you say, okay, Maytag, you've got to take my refrigerator back, or you've got to pay a disposal charge. Just practically speaking, what happens? Because closing the loop in theory, ultimately you want, the object may not make sense to send back to the Maytag factory somehow because of the problems of shipping and distribution. So the question is, how do you effectively do that? Or are we going to have a cost of recovery basically paid for in the product, and then the manufacturers pay somebody else to take it away, and then they dispose of it just like the city does, but not, you know, it's just not being, it's a cost shifting, but not really an environmental saving. And that would be the piece of this puzzle that I'm not objecting to a cost shift, but it seems that's a big problem to solve with a small piece. But if you really can recycle, it's a different story. Can you comment on that at all?
Well, one thing is, you know, like the bottle bill, you know, it's a similar situation. I can't really speak on about the larger products like the refrigerators. I don't know if you know, and it might be actually, because I haven't committed the resolution to memory, but it could be that it's there's flexibility, I believe, in the way it's the bill is worded, that it's...
It's mostly about the packaging, right?
Yeah, that's how I've heard about it.
It's the sugar that put all this plastic around tiny little, you know, smart card that you got a big package like this.
Did you catch that word?
Mm-hmm. Meshuggah. I don't know how to spell it.
I'm sitting in a meeting with
M-E-S-H.
Translated means pork.
Yeah.
Never mind.
That's his other favorite word.
But I think, to get back to your issue, I think that once manufacturers are required to create take-back programs, they're going to be incentivized to reuse this stuff, because it just doesn't make sense to take it back and dispose it, because then it's all cost to them. But if they take it back and they start designing things so that they can reuse some of the parts and salvage other parts to be remanufactured in some way. So I think the program is the first stepping stone in getting manufacturers to start thinking about how they produce things and how they can be recycled within their own manufacturing process, because it wouldn't pay for them. There'll be inherent savings in the recycling.
Yeah, well, part of the challenge is a lot of stuff is manufactured overseas, and shipping it back to the overseas source is at that point becomes a very expensive exercise.
I don't think they do it.
They're not.
And so I think that, I guess all I would do is to say that the general principle of trying to avoid, to move away from a throwaway society to a reuse society is the general principle I think we can all support. I just want to be cautious about holding out a lot of hope that this is going to recycle backwards, as opposed to produce some marginal improvement, which in general is a good idea.
Alderman has my
hand. I'm like Margaret Mead. I think, the only way anything ever gets done is a small group of committed people to do it. What's happened in other areas, and I applaud you for doing this, because I was considering the same thing myself when I heard about what some other states are doing. When states like California and Texas do it, it has a lot of sway. The CAFE standards started in California. They had their own separate set of auto emission standards. Eventually, the rest of the country had to move that direction because it was such a huge market. And I think, you know, forcing manufacturers to think about the way, and I think of it mostly about the way that they package their products, but also what they're using in their products. I don't know if you can do anything about the foreign manufacturers, but I know you can do a lot about a lot of the packaging that goes on here. And it's just ridiculous that so much plastic gets wasted, and so much paper and foil and other things get wasted in the packaging of products that, you know, we've got, you know, Christmas holidays coming up, kids tear the thing open, and you know, the bins will be full of just the packaging. And it is meshuggah. That's the only word I can think that really fits it. The only other thing that I had been talking to Allison Leary, who had a separate sort of concern about the plastic bags that get used in all the markets. And I don't know if this covers that or not. It doesn't. Okay. Because that's, if for people who don't know, there's actually a Sargasso Sea of plastic bags out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, which is huge, where it's literally, you know, several feet deep of plastic bags that collect because they get into the currents, and then they just, you know, they stop moving around, and they collect right here, and they slowly sink down to the bottom. But it is, it's a huge, it's basically a gigantic island of plastic, and it has plastic bags, it has a lot of other plastic products in it. So, I think the sooner we get after this, the better. But I'm all in favor of striking out to do it, because like I said, I think for it, having municipalities support the states, and then the states pass legislation or programs that are going to require manufacturers to do this, is really the only way that we're going to affect their behavior. I don't think there's any other way to do it.
Thank you. Alderman Fishman?
So in the resolution, so 32 states have the EPR laws. So can you give us kind of a jumping ahead, what are those states doing, and what does it require the municipalities to do? How do you get the plastics out of the bins and all that stuff?
I can't speak to that. I really don't know exactly what the other states are doing. Basically, the point of this is to kind of support Massachusetts as it starts to formulate these policies. I mean, it's very young.
Thank you. Alderman Fraser.
Yeah, I think in principle this sounds very good, and I'm for it. I think in practice, frankly, given the economic climate and the political climate in this country and where the manufacturing is going and coming from, I think the actual practical implication of this is going to be very difficult, which I'm sure you know. So I think I agree with Ted, what he says, you've got to start somewhere. But I think that you're really going to have to figure out how you're going to deal with implementing this, you know, and you're going to run into, you know, legal problems on interstate commerce. It's in California, they're already in a court case that's going to, what they try to do with I think it was fuel efficiency and fuel standards. There's going to be tremendous opposition to this from the big boys.
But, think of it, when the first community, they said we should recycle bottles. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's how these things start.
No,
and there's always a cost, no matter what. You know, so if somebody's paying the cost, and whether you're paying the cost of having your old computer picked up in front of your house, or you know, whatever it is, the $12 for the pickup, or that you're paying, you buy the computer. You know, the cost is there, and the problem is there, and you know, it's not like really. It's just finding a better solution, because the better solution is that there will be hopefully less wasteful packaging in the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also agree with you on that.
There are manufacturers who have started this on their own. Apple is a big one. Apple recycles, and right now they have a program, and the way it works is anytime you buy an Apple product, you can just hand in your old computer or whatever to the store, and they take it back, and they're starting to reuse appliances. And actually, appliances, refrigerators, too. I'm not sure which manufacturer, but they're starting to take refrigerators back, and they're doing it through the dealerships. So, I mean, there are ways to work this stuff out. Mm-hmm. And I think what the state wants to do is start with electronics. I think electronics is the biggest one.
Well, that's where your noble metals are anyway. So. Yeah. You can recover some of your...
Which all go to India, where children are taking them apart and getting very sick.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Sorry to hear that.
So, the one thing I noticed, there's nothing from the state talking about how they plan on implementing it, because the resolution talks, and I'm assuming that this resolution is mirroring some of the other resolutions that were passed in the other communities, but it doesn't talk about the state's policy. I mean, do we have that? Can we get that?
Yeah, it hasn't formulated it yet. I mean, this is just really
so DEP. So this is strictly from like Clean Water Action and some of the other environmental groups trying to put something together to get the state to develop something.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Of course, there has to be a stat somewhere along the line, and God knows what the state legislature is going to come up with. We don't know. Probably they don't know. But I think it has to be a stat. And frankly, I'm all in favor of this resolution.
Alderman Baker?
No, that's fine. I'm just,
I thought you were going to make a motion.
No, I'm glad to move it at some point.
Okay. So there's a motion on the table? All those in favor? That's unanimous.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ted, your comment about taking apart reminds me, what are the three most terrifying words of the holidays? Some assembly required.
Now, is that you approve this? Does that have to be approved by
the full board? Board. Okay. So we'll recommend this to the full board. The full board will meet the third weekend, third Monday in December, and then the full board will probably vote it out. It shouldn't be an issue.
Well, it's a crapshoot when it's programs and services that votes on it.
Oh, this is true. But if there's any other supplemental information you want to send in the meantime, please feel free. I'll get the list of the other communities and try to put that into the report as well.
Appreciate it. And we'll try and find out how other states are managing it.
Okay, good.
Thank you. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Sorry for the delay.
And I'll get that energy audit, I promise. Yeah. Working on it.
I signed up.
May I take just a moment to say that Green Decade, in our January and February newsletter, would like to publish a list of names of aldermen who've already had their energy assessments and those who have scheduled them. So I think it would be like a good role model for the citizens of the community. So you'll be here. You either received a message.
I read an implicit threat in that. Thank you for couching it so sweetly.
I actually got a call this afternoon, and I told the person that I would have difficulty as well as I think one of my colleagues from Ward 5. Because our houses are such messes, it would take a long time.
Gives you reason to clean it up.
But it'd take a long time before we can get somebody outside to come inside. So.
You know what? There's so much of a demand now that there's a wait. So
Believe me, when they go off to college, it gets better.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Get out one of those new housing gardens.
No. Of course, well. Oh, and I need to talk to you about that because I got a call from somebody.
We're going to see you on the cable show, Hoarders.
It will be, yes.
Yeah.
The next item is item number 130-11, Paul Folletti, Alderman Sangiolo, Alderman Danberg, and Alderman Johnson requesting home rule legislation to create a capital preservation fund for the City of Newton modeled on the Community Preservation Fund to address the capital needs of the city. Maureen has asked to...
Paul.
Hi.
How are you?
Welcome back again. Yes. It's nice to see you all. I mean, you know, this is room I try to stay away from. It was not like I was abused in here, but pretty close.
That's where the magic happens.
You were usually the hardest one to convince, and then you would be the leader of it. So.
Well, that's, in other words, that's why. This should be kind of easy, because some of these people, you know, you guys were here when we were talking about the CPA, and we got that to happen, which, you know, I was opposed to in the beginning, and then ultimately came up with a number, remember, and Kenny was at 3, and Lyle was somewhere in the middle.
No, I went for 1. I was ultimately, there with you at 1,
if
right
we were
away.
Ever going to sell this, we needed to do it at 1, and it's been a really good, I think it's been a great program, but, you know, as time goes on, you know, some of the things that I've been worried about is that, number one, some of the things way back at the beginning of the process are just barely starting to get done, like the graveyard stuff, and a lot of money, you know, from Durant Kendrick to some of the other money is still sitting, you know, in the fund. It was well over, I think, $8 million that was unspent. But even more telling, I think, right now is the fact that this year's allocation, very little of it has been spent, which, you know, brings me to the assumption at this point that it's kind of run its course. It's been, I think, almost 10 years.
I don't think it's fair to say that it's run its course. I think it's more of certain projects are not eligible anymore.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that I think that, you know, unfortunately, the terminology, you know, we would have loved to have been able to do a new beach house at Crystal Lake, but unfortunately it was on the wrong lot. You know, if it was on the other side where we bought the land with CPA money, it would have been a lot easier to do the project. And through the whole process, you know, there were times that we tried to do capital projects and the community came after us and tried to, you know, light down at Stern's playground where we ran into trouble. But the thought process that I've come up, you know, to over the 2 years, actually it was long before I left the board, I was talking about this as one of the campaign issues, that we needed to find a way to deal with the $260 to $300 million in capital projects that, you know, every year when we did our prioritization and came up with priority ones, twos, and threes, we never really got beyond priority one. And especially when we started doing things like paying for fire trucks with bonds and stuff like that, really lost the ability, you know, to do capital projects because we were now doing ordinary maintenance and buying things that we used to pay cash for with bonds. So I said to myself, you know, it would be nice if we could get the public to support. I felt it would be much easier with capital projects, especially with the people who know that there's a tremendous amount of schoolwork that needs to be done, and that there are these other capital projects at the buildings that have been identified with the energy audits and everything that we've done. There needs to be a mechanism short of a debt service override, because those are continuous. Every time you want to do a special project, and they're all for certain periods of time, not all of them are going to be, you know, instantaneously paid for. If it's a large project, it could be 10 years, that whatever the length of the bonds are, it could spread out that far. So I said, wouldn't it be nice if we could, you know, do something like the CPA, where, and it would be difficult, I don't know, if the state would match it like they do, but it certainly would be a nice way to tie into the School Building Assistance Bureau on school projects, so that while we approve these things, we could at least, you know, be queuing, you know, in their system. And then on the municipal side, you know, there are paybacks like with the energy stuff where, you know, over a certain number of years you're supposed to get it back in the efficiency of the building, but we could also use to pay for the bonds. But there needs to be seed money. And it can't, like, you know, I've heard you say over and over again, how North bonds, you know, have struggled or have strangled the city's ability to do other projects. Well, if we had this dedicated source, way back in the old days, we only did $5 million worth of projects a year. That's what we borrowed for, and we borrowed for 10 years. You know, very rarely did we go beyond that, so that we got them paid off quickly and just kept, you know, doing more projects as we paid them off. Well, with these two high schools now, it's kind of, you know, capped our ability to be able to do that, since we had to go to longer bonds, which means that you're paying for them for a much longer period of time. So I said, well, if we could get home rule legislation, very similar to the CPA, it doesn't have to be worded anything differently. But, you know, I was talking with Maureen last week about it, and I was saying, you know, wouldn't it be interesting if we were able to somehow connect it and allow you to have a certain percentage between the two, so you could move between one and the other depending on the needs of the city when you do your, you know, when you have the program reviews every year. But the more I thought about that, I said, if you combine them, there are some communities that haven't adopted the CPA.
Right.
So they would not be able to take advantage of the Capital Preservation Act if they didn't adopt the other one. So I don't want to force people, especially now that the state's not reimbursing dollar for dollar what the city is spending. So I said to myself, I can't imagine that there would be anybody, either in the mayor's office or in the Board of Aldermen, that wouldn't be looking for a guaranteed annual $3.5 million, or if you did it at 1.5%, and kind of backed off a little bit on the CPA, so that you still funded it, but only to, you know, what your demands were going to be, and at the same time adopted this new act and used this money to leverage the borrowing that you need to do to start these projects. It would be an easy source of funds to take care of additions, modulars, and some of these smaller school construction projects, and take the pressure off these debt service override requirements. You haven't asked for one yet. But on the other hand, it seems to me that projects like getting moving on the Carr School, getting moving on a new addition on the back of the countryside, take down the five steel units in the back and put a double, you know, building back there, it wouldn't cost a lot of money, but a source like this would provide funds to get into the design phase and a lot of that that's associated with getting those projects off the ground. right now, in order to get this day thing going, you've actually moved in and taken some of the money from the state zero interest loan that I think was given to us on North, in order to be able to start that process, or at least I hear that that was something that was being looked at. I don't know.
They're not doing it.
Can't do that.
To it.
Can't yeah.
Well, but the point is that if the state allows you to use that money, I mean, you can. In other words, it's no different than when we took the stock money. And it was supposed to be for the retirements of those firefighters, and ultimately we moved it into the city, and we've never really paid it back. We've got it extended to the point where I don't think the state even remembers it anymore. But they gave us $2.6 million to take care of those retirements, and we were supposed to pay it back. But, you know, I think that everyone realizes that it was used for good intentions. So,
Paul, we had discussed this. It sounds like what you're trying to put together is something similar to the CPA program, but there is no capital program that exists now in the state where they would match it.
Absolutely. But I mean, what I'm saying is.
So it would just be a tax on the residents of Newton that we're at, yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously, I think we're always on the leading edge of these kinds of concepts. I can't imagine out of the 351 cities and towns that there aren't people out there that are looking, you know, the CPA, it took a while for that to catch on. If you remember, way back in the beginning, we got there because it was a one-to-one match. A lot of people came on, and it had already dropped down 75%, and basically, you know, it's even less. I think it's 50% now. But the point is that I think that if we're going to consider doing something like this, I think that it's in our benefit, in other words, to inform a lot of other people in the state that this is a source. I mean, it's everybody's problem. And maybe it's a little bit different in terms of how much, you know, people, you know, can access in terms of borrowed funds, you know, in order to using this money to pay for those bonds. But it's still a concept that I think goes even further than the four things that were eliminated with the CPA Act. I think if you talk to everybody at the Mass Municipal, everybody would say, man, we really like the CPA Act, but unfortunately you can't use it to do repairs. And, you know, and if you do, you really have to word it. It's time that everybody realize that it's, you know, we come up with something that parallels that. The language can be somewhat the same. And if the state makes a decision, because they're doing it one way or another, on school projects they're doing it with the SBAB, in other words, so, you know, if they did it through this mechanism, at least they would know that communities are matching. In some communities like Waltham, where their reimbursement rate's like 98 cents on every dollar spent, or in Fall River or New Bedford, where they actually get, you know, twice as much, $2 for every dollar. If this isn't something that's really important to them because they get so much, you know, in terms of school reconstruction, the so-called poorer communities. But in Newton, you know, with the large tax base and with the backlog, I mean, I think our buildings are in probably as tough a shape as buildings in New Bedford or Fall River. The difference is that we do not do the repairs because we end up putting the money into, you saw it with the capital, but the charter maintenance in the schools. No matter what, how much more money that you give them, it's always only less than 2%, and they usually freeze it around March and never really spend the real amount of money that was by charter required to be spent to maintain the schools. So what I don't want you to do, because I saw on the light ordinance and on many other things that we did in the past, when we get our law department involved in starting something from scratch and inventing every word that goes into it, it could take years. And we don't have that long to wait. You now have a CIP plan, and I think everyone's committed to getting a car going and getting Angier designed and getting maybe either an addition of service or I think Countryside is something that's begging to have order to make a north side, south side relief valve, in other words, for some of these kids, rather than busing them all over the city. You know, you need to get this done, and I don't know what the legislative agenda looks like when the new legislature comes in. This thing should get docketed, you know, right away. I mean, it could take less than 2 months between now and when this next board gets moving. to get this this legislation drafted. I can't believe, and I said to Scotty, how come these other two committees NAN this? And he said it's because we really didn't know what to do with them, and I was trying to convince everybody just to get rid of the stuff. And said if it was important, it would get itself redocketed. And that's, unfortunately, we're throwing so many good things out, using that concept. In other words, there's a lot of junk you can get off the agenda, but this isn't junk. This is, like I said, it's really funny because a couple of years ago at budget time, when I proposed the policies and guidelines about how raises should be tied to, the total revenue of the city and insurance and health insurance and pensions, and it was the key to solving all of these union negotiations and settling the school negotiation, except with some additional step changes. Sometimes things that have been proposed a long time ago that just people just couldn't fathom or understand, when people ultimately take another second look at it, and they say, geez, if we adopt this, we can solve all our union contracts and come up with a mechanism that's reproducible year after year after year.
Yep, just like debt exclusions. Now they're the...
But, debt exclusions, I think you're going to have a real problem, especially, depending on how much, how long, whereas you can leverage $20 million a year, with just this fund, and if you're adding to it from the $4 or $5 million that you're going to borrow out of the operating budget, you can do $40 million worth of work every year. In other words, with those two funding sources. And it just seems to me that, that it's a no-brainer. That, so the citizens, if they know they're going to get hit time and time again, every time one of these projects, and the worst part about it is that this allows you to be able to plan years in advance in order to have the flow. Like I said right now, North is finished, and we really should have had another school ready to go. But yet, because no one was willing to take that jump, we didn't empty out Carr School like we were supposed to in 2010. We left those people in there 2 years longer, so the problem got worse. And now we're going back to a school we just did an energy audit on, tightened the whole building up, spent $3 million, and now we're going to open it up again to put an addition on. And yet I thought when we infilled the courtyard, we were done.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
Sprinklers, too.
But so the point is that, you can only plan when you have a dedicated source. And a debt service override is helter-skelter. It depends on the economy. It depends on the advocacy. There's just so many other reasons, why people would yes or no a debt service. Whereas if it, we did it with the stormwater, and it worked, except for one thing. It was supposed to be 50-50, 50% projects, 50% labor. And instead now, most of that money is used to pay for three people, including the recycling person, the environmental person, who work in public works. So when something isn't watched over, and post-audit's not really functioning, then you have situations where $675,000 kind of gets spread out differently from what we all expected when we adopted it.
Post-audit's gone now.
I understand. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm going to recognize Alderman Hesmahan and Alderman Baker, and then Maureen would like to jump in.
I was going to compare this to the surcharge on the water sewer bill, because, and I think this is the right idea, because it's a steady source. And when I saw a capital preservation fund, frankly, I thought it was going to be maintenance and repairs primarily. And I still think that's where the majority is going to be. I'll tell you the dilemma that we face all the time. And I get people asking all the time for me to docket an amendment to the charter that would have not a maximum expenditure for charter maintenance in the school committee, but to have a minimum amount that has to be spent on maintenance. I'm not willing to do that because I think you'd have to have an escape valve, and every time we'd end up voting, we don't want to lose teachers, we don't want to lose firefighters, we don't want to lose police officers, so we'd get the three-quarters we'd need or the two-thirds or whatever to override it. I think that the better way to do this and the more thoughtful, planful way to do this is exactly what you're outlining, is to have and it can't be a tax, it has to be a surcharge. It's very similar to the CPA. Whether the state adopts it or not, I think, the best ideas do end up coming out of, for communities, municipalities, the best ideas end up coming out of home rule petitions that, one town or city does, and then maybe four, five, six, and then eventually it gets passed. But if we don't start, it'll never happen. But
it has
we
to be
need
adopted
to do
by the taxpayers. But, right. I came from the first year I was elected.
Rather know what's coming.
I was the chairman of revaluation. The first time in the history of the city we ever revalued the city. And if we didn't do it in 6 months, we were going to have to cut $10.5 million from the budget. So what did I do? You know, I was the only person that was willing to take on the job. We told the assessors, we hired a company, and we went through the process of revaluing all the property. That first year, we got 8,800 abatements. 8,800. There were 3,000 people storming this building that wanted a public hearing. We had to have it in the hockey arena in D.C. And I had to chair that. I was only an alderman for 4 months. And I was the person who had to stand in front of those people. 125 people on the speaker's list. So well,
thankfully, you didn't install the water.
I've been there after, Fat Pellegrini with a bullhorn up in the top. It was unbelievable. There are still stories that are written about what happened. But the point is that sometimes you got to stand up and you got to do something, you know, that's important. And this is one of those times, if you ever want to solve the problem about the infrastructure, the crumbling infrastructure of the city, you need to have this dedicated source. And it's not pretty. It's no different than the water sewer and how people have accepted that. We're now down to 300 abatements after all those years of dealing with assessing. It's a model assessing department. And it wasn't easy to do. It took 20-something years of my constant watching over it in order to make it so that it just runs itself. This can be done the same way as the CPA. My only complaint about the CPA is that sometimes everything gets bogged down because they don't have enough projects and they're literally trying to throw it at people. Just like the community development block grant money, where the bulk of the town goes for administration and paint. That they give people for painting their houses rather than eliminating blight and some of the things that the community development block grant fund was originally designed to do. But because it was a federal program, it's lasted a lot longer than many of us expected it to. So in other words, what I would suggest is to draft something, you know, to have the law department working on it for 2 months, and really put it on the fast track so that the mayor can have it before the budget, and then we have to start looking at, you know, because it's going to have to be approved by the voters, but it still has to go through the legislature, I think, first. But you could get it ready for next November, have it passed, and just about the time that these projects are designed and ready to go, you could have something that could actually provide the funds to kick it off.
Alderman Baker.
Well, let me ask Paul, the legal issue, the legal and policy issue on this one is I've run into once before, back when Prop 2.5 was passed. And going to the legislature with a home rule petition was a non-starter upon the policy level. But also we ran into the legal issue that, generally speaking, property has to be taxed on a uniform basis, so you need a statewide authorization. I'm not sure how easy it is, as opposed to a home rule petition for other things, constitutionally, for us to be able to get a special tax in Newton that is not...
Can't be called a tax.
I mean...
Well, I understand, but still...
We got to do it to see... We already made the pathway.
No, the CPA, though, was under state legislation. That was the difference. It was an author general law. All I'm trying to get at is that before I would pursue this further, I'd like to know a little bit about the legal question, because there's no point in going up there if we can't do it.
I would just, you know, the one thing that you and I did a long time ago, before we, that first month that we became an alderman, was impose the surtax on everybody whose land abutted the Chester Hill Country.
That was a betterment assessment. And
you and I were the ones who pulled it off. And basically we got state approval to do it, and that's taxing a certain group of people.
Well, it was an interesting thing. As a matter of fact, seriously, it wasn't called a tax because you were actually giving compensation in the form of a benefit conferred. It was the flip side of the...
You got to look at a golf course.
Yeah.
We got to tie up 88 acres long enough for the city to buy our own golf course. So we've done things that we were told couldn't be done.
No, but I'm not...
So I don't expect you to be the one to shoot this horse.
No. I just want to be clear about whether the horse has a chance of getting out of the barn first. And the question of... having a dedicated fund, I have some sympathy for. So that's not my concern. My concern is just make sure that we're not running into it.
I mean, the beauty about this is that once it gets approved, just like the CPA, it happens every year. It's like I've always said about setting water rates at budget time. If we don't do it at budget time and we get the new assessment every year, it becomes political. This is the best way to do something and make it non-political.
Josh? No.
He was out in the hallway.
Right. Maureen, did you want to weigh in? Oh, we're also being joined by Alderman Linsky.
I'll be happy to. Thank you. I think my only comments would be that I think this is really part of a larger conversation and really falls into the same conversation as your next docket item. The mayor has publicly, you know, we have published the CIP. The mayor has publicly said that we need a new revenue source. We intend to take from now until probably next September to October time frame to identify what that source ought to be as a city, working with you as a board, working, going out and doing working groups, town hall meetings, talking to citizens, really trying to figure out what the best approach is for the city. As you know, on next Tuesday night, the pay-as-you-throw group that the board had put a resolution together last spring during the budget process for someone to study that. They'll be doing their their presentation on Tuesday night. That's clearly an option that we need to vet in the next 6 to 9 months. The mayor has said that he believes a debt exclusion could be an attractive option for the city. Excuse me. I think this falls in that same discussion. What I don't think we can do is fast-track just this one and preclude the other two. I think we can only go to the voters looking for one thing. And so as a group, we've got to figure out what that ought to be. I don't know if it's a separate capital preservation surcharge, if it's a splitting the CPA and the capital preservation, if it's the pay-as-you-throw, if it's a debt exclusion. At this point, I don't think we are in a position to pick which one it ought to be. I certainly think it's worth investigating all of our options. I do agree with you, though, Alderman Baker. I mean, if this one can't work, that's a whole different thing.
I hope it can, because I'd like to have it as part of the toolkit. I'm sensitive to that.
That was the reason that I put these both items on the docket, because we had just gotten the CIP, and it seemed appropriate time to move something forward to give those tools to the administration. But I think what I heard Paul saying, it's not necessarily fast-track it, but you want to be ready. You want to be ready in case that is one of the options. And it might take a while to get through to, one, draft the home rule legislation, find out whether we can do it or not.
And I mean, most important, obviously, when you do a debt service override or any of these other things, you can call a special election.
Right.
My hope was not to have to spend an extra $100,000 to take this up early, unless there was, you know, you could always put multiple things out in front of the public. But the other two things are going to constantly require, you know, going back at. And once again, as I said to Maureen last week when I spoke with her, I find it so difficult, having been one of the people that helped craft that automated trash situation, that I thought we had a commitment to the public that in reducing the amount of trash that they were going to throw out and reducing the amount of tonnage and the monies that we were going to be saving and using more recycling, that, you know, we basically were giving them a little bit less of a service, but basically saving money for the city. And everyone bought into it. It's been a great success. The problem now is that what are we going to do now? We're going to punish them by charging them, now that we've identified the cost per barrel to do the service. Now we're going to punish the very same people that we told that we were going to save money. And in other words, whereas I want to always go at something, I haven't heard many people complain about the CPA. They pay it. Some people complain a little bit about the stormwater charge, but they pay it, and they get past it because they see some of the positive things that get done. There should be no reason. Now, debt services, all depends. If there are problems with the project, there are delays and cost overruns, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, what do you do? Whereas this happens every year, you know, right at the time that we get the money from the state or we get the money quarterly from the taxpayers, it's a wonderful cash flow. And if you're going to go before the voters, you want to do all of them at the same time. It would be a shame, because the other things you can get ready and go before the people within 90 days. You call for a special election, and this wouldn't be ready because the legislature hasn't, you know, been able to act on it. So this is going to require more front-end work by others,
right,
you know, before it can be put before the people. And if you're going to do this after the other two, then you might jaundice people to this if they vote down the other two options. Because I'm going to tell you right now, if a pay-as-you-throw is proposed, there are going to be people crawling out of the woodwork to do an initiative petition to have it repealed. And I'll be one of the first people on the committee.
Have what repealed?
The pay-as-you-throw. Because it's wrong. It's wrong. And I think that, you know, people shouldn't be punished for doing something good.
Can I?
Alderman Baker.
Leaving that aside for a second, though, Paul, one of the other options is, I know that Senator Cream had an amendment in for the CPA authorizing bill. If there were some way to craft an amendment that said a community that wanted to impose an additional surcharge for capital facilities that wouldn't otherwise be covered by the CPA but was acceptable to the voters, in other words, you take that out. That's an alternative to home rule, but it gives you a statewide authorization.
The only problem with that is that when it starts to creep up to close to 3%, 1 in 1, well, I heard when Keynes 999, 1 in 1, I mean, that's how we sold the original CPA. You know, basically, if we tried to get 3% back then, it would have failed. Yeah. As you know, we only got it passed by a few votes. So I think it's easier to segregate them and have them each be no more than 1.5%. You know, but on the other hand, they can be tied together and say that no community can you know, exceed more than a certain percent for either type.
Well, I'm just suggesting,
you know what I mean?
That's a different, you get to the same output. I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, Chestnut Hill might love 3%, but it doesn't fly in Upper Falls.
I'm not.
I'm not sure it flies in Chestnut Hill.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I always do this to him. I tell him he represents a certain group of very, very wealthy individuals.
The mean streets of Chestnut Hill.
But also, Alderman Baker, I'm not sure that legislation's been sitting there for quite some time, and it's moving at a very slow pace.
Measured pace, yes.
So
glacial.
I'm not sure how far we'll go with that. Does somebody else down here have their hands raised?
I actually have mine up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Alderman.
Well, I mean, I think one thing that we could do, I'm not sure what we do here. We've got two committees that NA'd it, and we're at the end of the term. We need to do something. I don't know whether to refer it or hold it so that we can get some answers from the law department or what the best way of doing this
is. That's what Scotty suggested.
Hold it.
You refer it.
Oh, refer it.
Refer it, and then I think what you do is you just kind of privately have a cup of coffee with Marie Lawler and ask her to take a look at it and think about how she would propose, you know, doing it. You know, she's the best. And I think that she's going to give you an honest, idea of you know, looking at the existing legislation and what it would take, you know, to put this together. It's simple. Keep it simple. It doesn't need to be complicated. And if the state wants to do something, if some coalition of people want to do something at the state level, that means, you know, Ruth Balzac got us the sprinkler law on our own.
Yes, we know. It cost us $4 million. Thank you very much.
I mean, maybe we should have her do something positive.
It was positive.
It was just positive.
Expensive.
It's very expensive. We didn't realize that. So I was hoping that we'd get a sense of the committee on whether we should move forward with this and maybe refer it to the next board, but I thought maybe we could do a resolution to say we do it. But if you want to refer it, that's fine.
Well,
is that the motion?
I'd move to refer it, but I'd also ask that you confer with the law department in the meantime.
Okay.
I think that's important.
Yeah.
That way, you know, we don't waste 2 months. You get 60 days that she can, you know, look at it and take out the legislation and make maybe a couple of different calls and just see, you know, if there'd be some, you know, support for it and give you a recommendation. But at least she could, you know, by the time you take it back up again, say February, we'll have some answers.
Okay. I heard a sigh.
What was the motion again, Lyle?
To refer to the new board.
Okay.
Was the motion on the table? Is there any?
With the understanding that we'll consult the law department.
Consult the law department. We'll move forward with the research on IRA.
No, and if you want to ask, I don't know who's going to be on the new committees or anything, but if there's anybody on this committee that wants to, you know, to work with me, to sit with her, with Marie or whoever the law department designates, I'll be happy to put my, I'm prepared to be behind this as far as we're willing to put my years, you know, as something that this is absolutely necessary for the city. It's something that, you know, if I had been successful, would have been one of the first things that I had proposed. I mean, this would already be in place. But it's so important. Without this, you'll be begging every time you want to do something, which is so important. And I think people are already starting to see the benefits of leaving North High School. You know, I think that people, you know, you don't hear people saying the kinds of things now. They're all saying it's too small.
But we can add on. We left space.
I know we left space, but very, very minimal.
We will
We're
be adding on.
I know we will.
I think we'll be selling some tombs in the catacombs underneath when we expand the storage.
Okay, so there's a motion on the table.
Not if we have to abate the asbestos.
To refer 130-11. All those in favor? It's unanimous. So that passes.
Thank you, Paul.
I'll leave it up to you to let me know if you want me
I will.
To...
And I'll let you...
I've told Maureen I'd be happy to, you know, to work with them in any way that I can. I mean, the only reason I say I'm willing to put all my years of being an alderman on the table and saying this is something that I believe, you know, I believe it then and I believe it now, that this is something that we absolutely have to do.
Right? I don't know who's going to be chair next term, but I'll make sure whoever is.
The next...
If not, I'll just stay retired.
The next item is item number 207-08, parens 2. That's the Programs and Services Committee.
Thank you, Paul. Thank
requesting
Paul.
Discussion with the Executive Department and various city department heads regarding use of debt exclusions to address city needs. So, again, that was the... It was on the same...
I'll
sit
back here and see if any chameleons are in
there. This was a similar sort of concept to bring this forward so that we could... either get it to the next board or pass some resolution to the executive department to start thinking about it. And we've already heard that they are starting to think about it. So.
I would just refer it.
Referral?
Yeah. That way we can keep it on
refer.
Back burner.
Okay. All those in favor of referral? That's unanimous.
Thank you. We're referring the rest of the agenda.
Yes. So I would like to...
That's it.
Chairman. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Really appreciate it.
You're expecting you actually read
so it? I don't want to read in every single item. So is there a motion to refer all other items to the next board?
Motion to refer all other items to the next board.
Yep. There's a motion to refer all other items.
Yeah, we're going to refer.
Okay. Yes. All those in favor? That's unanimous.
Except for the rule.
Oh, and I'm sorry. And we're going to have Alderman Baker report out 2 rule items. Can we do that?
Yeah, but we can't take them up because they're not.
No, because they're not on the agenda.
So we have to refer them forward. I know. I didn't know we'd get to those on Monday.
Well, but don't we have to meet on Monday?
We do.
Yeah.
We could vote them out on Monday.
You want to do them on Monday?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I'd like to have the rules in place.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Okay.
So you think Monday's going to be 7:15?
Or 7, if we take these two up, do you want to do 7:15?
Do you think rules, if we're going to report out, do the rules thing to the programs and services, do you want to start 7:15? Can you make it?
Yeah, I've got to talk to my trees at 7, but I'll come down the hall.
You know, you could be proactive and talk to them before then.
Well, I've got 2 other colleagues I got to deal with that are part of this process.
So oh.
Is this the tree design?
No.
Urban Tree Commission.
We're designing trees.
Amy suggested they walk around and talk to all of them.
To lobby all the aldermen.
Talk that word about trees.
Right. Is that why they're bothering me?
Yeah. Right. So that was at 6:50. Are they just setting different times?
Everybody has
different
times.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if it's a tree commission or it's a tree conservancy.
Yes. It's a conservancy, actually.
No.
Right. It's a tree conservancy.
So anyway, but I'll come. Can I, even though we're not deciding it, Matt, give you a preview of coming attractions?
I don't think you're allowed to talk about it. It's not average.
Yeah.
There's no discussion. I'm just talking.
Well, do you want to have the meeting adjourned and then you can talk?
No, I'm not going to get in trouble. I would just commend the rules agenda to everybody and just report that the rules agenda was passed.
And we stuck a fork in it.
Please, not every
from now on.
Do you have a question about Monday? Did you have a question about the night? Did you get the email?
I didn't look at it, but no, I was actually going to, before we adjourn for reconsideration, docket item 404-11.
Oh, sure. Is this motion to reconsider?
Motion to reconsider, yeah.
All those in favor of reconsidering? That's unanimous. Although there was the motion to approve. All those in favor? Okay, no. We have to.
Monogamous.
So what's
Monday? Monday, so we had some discussion with the docket where the 2 Davids both kind of ended up being referred to finance. So we have to
take up our David Monday evening to but get him out.
Monday, the full board meeting, not
right
Monday.
The
19th.
The 19th.
Right.
Not to David. Monday. This sounds biblical. Why are you
David and Goliath.
So we'll meet at 7:15 before the full board. Take care of that and the rules. Two rules at him.
So then we'll report okay. that.
So who's using the slingshot?
What we really need is a Harry and David.
Right. Well, you're getting Wegmans down. Hell,
I don't know. We're getting into a jam.
So we're adjourned.